art helps us see that we have a common bond. And for those of us who embrace the Christian faith, it gives us a sense of God's heart towards all people, regardless of their status.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today, I am joined by professional actor and author Henry O. Arnold. Today, we will be talking about Henry's new urban fiction book, The Mercy Seat, which addresses a wide variety of urban issues, including poverty, father and son conflict, and the power dynamic between elites and the disenfranchised. Henry received his BA from Pepperdine University and his Master of Fine Arts degree at UNC Chapel Hill. His career as an actor and author spans over five decades with multiple stage and film credits. His most recent film is The Hiding Place. He has recorded over 100 audiobooks and is the author of the multi-volume biblical and historical fiction series entitled The Song of Prophets and Kings. The Mercy Seat is the first volume of the Urban Chronicles series. Thank you for joining us today, Henry. We're so glad that you're here with us.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Javet. It's just such a pleasure to be here.
So before we get started, please tell us very briefly about your family. I talked about your credentials, your background. We're going to explore that a little more. But for now, I think it's important that your audience, our audience, hear a little bit about you. Family is so important because it helps to humanize us as persons. So I want to build that connection between our audience and you. So please briefly share about your family.
Yes, I was raised in a home that loved the Lord and was very blessed in having parents who were godly parents. My father was a teacher and actor and theater director for Lipscomb University in Nashville. And my mother was also an actor and then became a journalist. And so the family dynamic in our home, there was four of us. I was the oldest of four children. It was in constant motion. People were flowing in and out of our house all the time. Writers, actors, missionaries, just wonderful people in the neighborhood, students that my dad taught. It was a constant hustle and bustle of just wonderfulness of humanity coming through our doors, and some staying longer than they should have, but others just wonderful people, exciting people, and that richness of hospitality that my parents gave us as children in those experiences was just a beautiful introduction to how to relate to people in the world. And then my professional career started in 1970, as you mentioned, with my father in a production of Man of La Mancha. And he played Don Quixote, the lead. And it was just a riveting time to be working with my dad, but also discovering within myself that I had the ability to tell stories as an actor. And that launched my career. And then about 7 years later, I met my wife, Kay. And 1978, we started dating. In 1979, we got married and then, you know, had a couple of kids, wonderful daughters. And we've been married for almost 45 years now. I tell you, the Lord blessed me when I got that lady to say, I do. And so we've been all over the world together, and it's just such a blessing to have her at my side. And so that's kind of
That's
the
awesome.
Brief history of.
I love it. I see the influence of father on his son, and I
yes.
also see the son following the Lord, but at the same time continuing with what he learned and building on that. That's awesome. So to start off, please tell us some about what led you to writing The Mercy Seat with this focus on urban poverty. Our podcast is about urban issues. It's urban, our urban voices. Therefore, it intrigued me. So help us to understand what led you to write that and especially adapt that focus.
It was my wife, because okay. I had been writing the historical fictions, that the Song of Prophets and Kings series, and my wife said, hey, why don't you just write something contemporary? And it was like she threw down the gauntlet, and I didn't know what to write about. But then I read an article in the Nashville Tennessean about a pastor who worked with urban societies, specifically the homeless, and he was doing a memorial service in a small park, downtown City Park, in front of our public library, doing a memorial service to those homeless people who had died in that specific calendar year. And he read the names and said a prayer and just said, I want these people, their names, to be spoken in honor of their lives. And I had been working with some homeless organizations like Room in the Inn in Nashville, Room in the Inn, the Rescue Mission, Safe Haven Shelter for Homeless Families, because there's that need as well, and doing volunteer work with them. And I thought, okay, there is a start, a pastor in a urban community who is honoring a community of people, a demographic of people who are definitely on the margins of society. And so that was the start. That's how the novel starts. And I just allowed my imagination to work, the freedom of my imagination, and it went with the father and son, the family, all of that. And it just totally unfolded from there.
That's awesome. Could you provide us with a brief description of The Mercy Seat and its narrative arc?
Well, it is that centers around the conflict and struggle between corrupt cops, gangs, power elites, trying to muscle their will on an urban community that has no ability to really stand up for itself, fight back, try to resist the overwhelming forces of corruption and greed within these different groups of people groups. Mm-hmm. And I just plopped a church right in the middle of that. So many large cities, metropolitan cities, have this kind of experience and reality, and churches trying to survive, and pastors and families trying to survive and minister to one another in a pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. So what is that? What does it look like? And I wanted to have a real internal conflict between the father and the son. And it's an interracial marriage in this, or it's an interracial family. The Crane, Maxwell Crane, is the pastor, and his wife, Kenda, and then they have the three kids. And it's an interracial marriage. So it's a wonderful blend of family, community, and church dumped inside a pressure cooker. What's going to happen?
Right. So where did you draw inspiration for your characters? I get the story. I know that you shared a little bit about it, but the characters, where did you get that?
Well, as I said, the father, son, the husband and wife, Maxwell and Kenda, I needed to start with them. What kind of family are they? I model it in a sense after my parents, and then my own marriage. It's full of conflict and tension at times, but also it's a loving commitment to each other that we have, and raising children and all of that. So I kind of just saw myself in these characters and other, my parents and other role models. So I had that in the back of my mind. But then I had to have characters such as the church secretary. I had to have the powerful people in politics and in economics in the city. And so I tried to think in terms of who these people might be that I have access to, just either in personal relationships or in just observing them mm-hmm. in the media. And matching those characters with the action of the story. I start with the action. What needs to take place in order to have a storyline that is compelling and rich with action and drama, and then fit those characters, tuck those characters inside that flow of the story. Mm-hmm. And making them authentic and believable. I don't know if you saw the film American Fiction. The character and the main character is played by Jeffrey Wright, and he's an author, and he's trying to write a fictional story, and he imagines in his mind two characters, a father and a son, in conflict with one another, and they actually in the movie. We see these characters manifested and they're talking to one another. And then they'll all of a sudden stop talking and look to Jeffrey Wright, the author, and say, I wouldn't say that.
Right.
I wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And so in my own imagination, I have these characters playing out the scenes and saying certain things and acting, making certain choices that are, I hope, authentic. And I pay attention to those characters in my imagination, and I trust that process for them to tell me, I wouldn't say that, or I wouldn't do that. And I have to go back and say, okay, I won't. What do you want to say? What do you want to do?
Yeah, that's a great illustration right there. I love it that the imaginative beings that you create are communicating what to add, what not to add, what they will do, what they won't do. And yet, at the same time, all of that is happening in your brain before it comes on the page.
It's a wonderful kind of...
That's a great...
It's a great, how shall I say, inspired daydreaming.
Right.
Because I do a lot of daydreaming.
That's good. Well, that's good for the author. That's how it's going to produce good product.
I hope so.
Same as here. Major themes of the book include father and son conflict, poor versus rich conflict, power, elites versus the disenfranchised, and the spiritual versus the human. Now, my question is, why are these topics so important to talk about?
I think it's important for people to see themselves, especially in a work of literary fiction, to be able to see themselves in the community, in the story. Can you identify with a character? Or can you identify with all the characters? And so the good guys, the bad guys, male, female, it doesn't matter. I want to be able to present a character that resonates authenticity and truth to the reader. And because you try to create a setting, in this case, an urban setting, with the conflict between the rich and poor, the powerful and the disenfranchised, all of these are recognizable environments that people have some association with, either personally, in their own lives, or people that they know or read about. So if I can give you a human being in my character that has, you know, multiple dimensions, and you can, it creates an empathy for that person because they're truthful, whether you like them or not as a character. whether you agree with the choices that they make, good guys or bad guys, it creates an empathy within the reader that helps them identify with who these people are. I think that expands the muscle, the heart muscle of how we look and view people, because we have a tendency to be so judgmental. And I think art, and specifically in this case, literary art, but art in general, mm-hmm. helps us see that we have a common bond. And for those of us who embrace the Christian faith, it gives us a sense of God's heart mm-hmm. towards all people, regardless of their status. I think that's why Jesus came to earth, mm-hmm. was to give us his heart and embrace us so that we might reflect that heart mm-hmm. back to the world.
Yeah.
His heart.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Actually, in Hebrew mind, majority Jewish people, when you talk to them, that's how they see life. Many of them do not think about afterlife. Their whole idea of living for God
right.
and being God-centric is to live life on this earth, making a difference among people, or people who are around them, which, you know, even in the Old Testament, we see that you're going to be a blessing. For Christians, that means eternal life that comes because of that promise that was given to Abraham. But the idea is same. What you're saying is Jesus came, he changed, and we see these elements in our society. Whether I am that character, as we talking about, or the conflict, in other words, whatever that might be, we have an opportunity, and I will say a responsibility to
yes.
actually speak the love of Christ and bring calmness where there's chaos, bring stability where there is instability and uncertainty. So I like that way of working out those or fleshing out those ideas.
There's a passage in scripture that I read recently that in Proverbs, he who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, mm-hmm. and he will reward him for what he has done. There is yeah. a sense of when we are lending ourselves, whether it's to the poor or to anyone, mm-hmm. we are showing God's kindness
yeah.
to one another.
Right.
And there's a righteous flourishing with
right.
that.
Right.
A righteous flourishing where we all as a community, as a neighborhood, as a church, as the kingdom of heaven are in concert with God in bringing salvation, I think, to the world.
Right. And it goes with this, another proverb is about justice that,
yes.
and you hear that all the time. God,
yes.
it's not that God desires sacrifices. That sacrifice means the bulls and lambs and goats, that kind of sacrifice. What he desires is justice. And when it comes to humanity, when that justice, and again, in Hebrew, the idea is tzedek, it's a beautiful
yes.
Idea, which where we get the idea of righteous, right? So in Christianity, that righteousness is not part of us, that comes from above. He makes us right with God, and therefore,
yes.
when he is in us, we should be able to reflect that in acts of justice. And when
yes.
justice is done, there you're not going to see this gap. You know, that's where we're going to experience peace, and we're going to experience when we say, your kingdom come, your will be done. So part of that, one way we can look at that is as we're praying, we are the answer of that prayer too, because God is building his kingdom. Spiritually speaking, we are
yes.
that kingdom, the church. And the church should move with that kind of compassion and clarity. What are some of the biggest things you learned, or did you experience any major shift in perspective while researching for the book?
I guess it just deepens.
Mm-hmm.
It deepened my relationship with God.
Mm.
it deepened my relationship with Kay and my immediate family. But it also deepened my relationship with other people, my brothers and sisters in Christ, but then the community of people, because the community of people that we have out beyond that. And I guess you could say more of a willingness to sacrifice.
Right.
It just deepens that commitment because of sacrifice, knowing what Jesus has sacrificed for us. And how can I know in the story, the mercy seat, there's a great sacrifice that takes place. It is sort of a spontaneous action the Father does that causes great trauma, but it is a sacrifice that he makes for his son and to try to protect his son, to bring him back from his own destruction that he sees happening and he's got to stop. That's like the Father sending Jesus to sacrifice himself to give the world a chance for salvation, to save the world from itself. And the Father in my story does what he does with mixed motives because he is human.
Right.
But he's still the Father that loves his son. Mm-hmm. And so he sacrifices. He takes the chance and sacrifices and gets in great trouble for it.
Yeah.
To save his son from himself.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what the deepest thing that I can come up with that has affected me with this story, to see that play itself out.
Yeah. My prayer is as people read stories, because it's interesting that Jesus used method of telling stories to bring people to the same knowledge of himself through him and reconcile them to God. We have to stop here, but in 2 weeks, we'll continue our conversation with Henry. Thank you so much for being on the show. Again, that was Henry O. Arnold III. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at OurUrbanVoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tune in 2 weeks for more honest discussions from diverse voices.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.